Okay. Sam Lanfranco, Chair, Policy Committee.
Klaus Stoll, Executive Committee.
Martin Silva, Secretariat.
Rudy Vansnik, Chair.
Lori Schulman, Vice Chair.
Joan Kerr, Membership Chair.
Dan Reed, NOMCOM appointee.
Adrian Hall, Extensia.
So welcome everybody to this NPOC breakout session. There was no agenda prepared for this meeting, as I was expecting that we build the agenda based on the discussions that we had today already and the ones that we need to have tomorrow with the CEO, President Fadi Shehali. That's going to happen tomorrow morning. What I would like to discuss is, first of all, one element that has been brought to the table early this morning by Bill Drake about organizing and setting up other meetings. It's something that we already discussed several times, that the engagement of volunteers is a not-so-easy task. Get them engaged is the first effort. The second effort is keep them engaged and participating in all the meetings that we have with ICANN is a not-easy task. If you want to also participate in working groups, then you're just a half-time job on doing all this work, because we are a small community, NPOC. We are the youngest constituency in ICANN for the moment. We are in the fourth year, of existence. And we have a quite big task. I think that it is important that we highlight, when we talk about having other meetings, what's the goal of the meeting at the end. And I think at the end, Jonathan Tuck was bringing to the table a really very good definition that you have the ICANN meetings and you have the non-ICANN meetings, if you can say. What we are going to try to do with GKPF, already starting next Wednesday with the webinars, is what we could call the non-ICANN meetings, to try to get people engaged in ICANN. And I think that from the perspective of NPOC being the organization or the constituency that looks into what are the concerns, I would leave out a little bit the operational concerns, because the concerns start before the operation already. New GTLD's program is not an operation yet. It's a pilot, it's a program that ends up in operations. So I would say that the concerns that we have about the domain name space is something that touches so many not-for-profits today. And I would even dare to say that if what happened in Paris is creating even more damage to the not-for-profit world, because they are going to stay away from the Internet because they are afraid of what happens on the Internet. So I think we have a real big mission. And with the ICANN 52 Singapore meeting just being in front of us, I would like to go around the table and ask you what you think would be a good agenda for our Constituency Day meeting in Singapore. We have been trying to do the regular meeting style, having all these typical administrative and other issues of the NPOC, but I think that that is something we can shorten as much as possible to a one-hour session and keep the rest of the time available for other topics to discuss. And I would like to go around, and I see already Sam, Klaus, and I will go around the table and ask everybody's opinion. So, Sam, you have the floor.
Okay, thank you, Sam Lanfranco, for the recording. I'm going to try and organize my thoughts based on the previous discussions that we had. One of our obligations to the organized portion of the civil society community. The NPOC constituency is not just to help inform and engage them in ICANN, but to help engage them in the governance and quote-unquote citizenship issues of being part of the Internet ecosystem. So the language that I'm increasingly using is that we have to engage in a discussion about the rights and obligations of Internet ecosystem citizenship. What does it mean in terms of the rights and obligations of the organizations? What does it mean in terms of how they should be worrying about governance at all levels, not just at the ICANN levels? And this is my reaction against ICANN's notion of engagement, which is to go out and convince somebody out there that they should come and be involved inside ICANN. And when they get here, they're then pressed, and FADI's key performance indicators stress this, they are pressed to donate free labor to the ICANN agenda. Whereas our obligation, and increasingly I see my obligation in the policy committee, is to turn around 180 degrees and look out there and say, okay, what are the issues that you're worried about, and what are the issues you should be worried about in your self-interest? Not an ICANN self-interest. And frequently, it's quite similar. The stuff around .health and those domain names, there's a community interest out there. What ICANN's role was fairly limited, and ICANN blew it. The same thing has happened, just to bring some of you up to date. We went through a very limited but internal NPOC discussion about the new regulatory legislation that's being drafted in the European community, and we made a submission. We went through and had a dialogue. And there are two parts about that that are important. There are three parts. It was about DNS, about domain names, which is an ICANN, in the ICANN remit, A. B, it's a potential hazard and damaging, in particular, to the civil society sector just because of the nature of domain names for civil society organizations. And the third, which gladly didn't go unnoticed, is that it involved collaboration with the intellectual property community. The IPC people, not the IPC as an organized group, but within the IPC community, we had a dialogue with them, and people were surprised that we weren't at each other's throats. We weren't like the two scorpions in a jar. And that's what I think we're obliged to do here, is to find more, to put together special interest groups. No, if there are 500 people around the world that are interested in something for 6 months, fine. The International Federation for Information Technology, it had SIGs. They used to call them birds of a feather. It still has them. The groups grow and shrink depending upon the intensity of the issue. And very little time is spent into putting together a procedure. You work on substantive things. The last thing I want to say, and this is, I found this particularly bedeviling as I got involved with ICANN, is that in my previous work, we spent considerable time building online organizational structures that did online work. The online discussions in ICANN, in NCSG, even in NPOC, in CUC, they'll have a very good discussion around an issue, go nowhere with it until they get into a face-to-face meeting and have the same discussion. You know, especially for those people who can't come to the meetings, we should be able to say, okay, how are we going to handle the membership database? How are we going to handle the notion of the public interest? Let's arrive at a consensus document, or a document that's not a consensus document, but is a good statement of our different opinions. Let's arrive at this online. Let's create it. Let's finish it off. It becomes a brick in the wall, and we go forward. We don't have a big discussion about it three or four times over 3 or 4 years online, and then somebody tries to cram it into an extra session at 4 o'clock in the afternoon in Singapore or Buenos Aires, you know, that we actually do some work online that is not just the ICANN-created working groups and policy discussion development processes, that we do that too.
Thank you, Sam. By the way, when you say that there are issues and topics that has to be discussed and are not really part of what I would say the ICANN remit in itself, there are other structures where this can happen and should happen. And it's one of the ideas that I will talk about later on is bringing NPOC also to other environments rather than just having it in ICANN. It's something that is larger than just ICANN's discussion. So I'm moving to Klaus. You have the floor.
Okay, Klaus, for the record. First of all, I completely agree with Sam, though I won't repeat a lot of what he says. Secondly, as a program guy in the executive committee, my interest is really to ensure that is what we are saying is translated into things that are actually happening on the ground. And what we need to do is happening on the ground, what is our goal, is basically to not to get more free labor for ICANN. There is much more, a basic step is to make internet governance and the whole thing relevant to everybody involved in the whole service. So it's all about relevance. I don't want to repeat everything. We've got the master plan. We've got next Wednesday the first webinar. This coming Wednesday, yeah. The first webinar and things like that, and to go straight forward to what Rudy said there, I think we need to have another webinar in Singapore, and we should have this webinar not on a Friday, not on anything. We should have it at the Constituency Day, at the break between 12 and 1. And it should be a webinar where we not speaking ourselves, but we have one representative of our own constituency and invite other people from other constituency to speak and to collaborate. There are, and you know, those who know the master plan, you can read it online, know what else is going on. But the other thing what I want to mention is we need to become more effective and we need to really get things implemented and going. So, for example, as Rudy said, suddenly we're getting the information that there is actually funds for meeting there and available. Readily available in the words of Bill, so I just sent up an email to Robert Hogarth that, please, Robert, I want all the relevant details on these funds. So, and once we've got that, I hope we can make some good use of it. But on the other hand, I want to say that, and I'm actually glad that Adrian is the last one in the line, because I want to cooperate with other people, organizations, and, for example, with Extensia, and use what they have, what they are doing. Where are the win-win situations? Where does Adrian see we can work together? What can we contribute? What can Adrian contribute? And things like that. And as a last point is, I received yesterday evening fairly late a message that that Windsor Castle, the conference center, is available for us for 3 days this year, and if we want to have an event there, so if we want to discuss that, we can discuss that too. But it has to be clear, unfortunately, it will be just a very high-level VIP event just because of the cost. We have to think about the minimum amount of about $5,000 per participant. So that's enough for the moment.
Thank you, Klaus, Rudy speaking. So I'm taking up the point that for our Singapore meeting, webinar is one of the topics that we need to put on the agenda for execution. Okay, Martin, up to you.
Sorry, Rudy, can you make absolutely sure, and I know, I'm just because we had exactly in Singapore last year the situation that we had planned a webinar, that everything was done, and suddenly we're coming into the room and we've been told, oh, we didn't have room, and by the way, we don't have any Adobe Connect or internet connectivity. If that happens again, I blow a lid.
By this, Rudy speaking. Mariam, I would like you to take up in the action list that in after this Washington, D.C. meeting, and it will be probably on Friday, the earliest for me, that we have a session together looking into the details of the logistics for this webinar in Singapore.
Oh, that's fine. I'll get that for you. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Martin Silva, for the record. I will not repeat what Sam said, but I would like to say it in my own words because I think that's a good way to assure that the things we're saying are actually being understood by the other. So I don't want everyone to repeat, but that's my justification for doing it. MPOC has basically two main issues. One is the engagement of other NGOs and people, and the other one is the procedures of ICANN that we have to comment on, the ICANN transition, the who is working group, the academy working group. We have two main subjects that are completely separate. One is, if you want, internal of MPOC life. The other one has to do with MPOC issues on ICANN issues being proposed. I think we should try to find a balance between those two things, just to keep in mind, you know, that MPOC has a relevant activity right now, that we don't have to wait for all the NGOs to come in to start doing some things. I know we are already swamped with work, but I think if we can just introduce a balance on thoughtful balance on that, we can just point one more thing to be proud of. Regarding the other thing, the internal thing of how we develop MPOC representation and membership, I would like to say the first thing is to repeat a little bit of Sam and the... I don't want to repeat the master plan, but as I've been taking notes for a long time, it's been clear that the first thing we must do to reach out to NGOs and to fulfill the webinars and the JKPF partnership and everything is explain why internet is relevant to NGOs, because NGOs are not being right now being they're not taking advantage of what internet means for them at all. Even if as individuals they are involved in internet, they are not involving internet in their NGOs. It's as crazy as it sounds, but the numbers show it. So we cannot discuss that. We already know internet is not having a decent penetration in NGOs. And even if it does sound as a titanic task, that's the only way. If NGOs don't involve in internet, we can ask them to join internet regulatory bodies. It's as simple as that goes. It's not that we are not reaching them. They are not reaching internet, therefore it doesn't make any sense to try to convince them, because they basically say, I don't have a domain name. Why would I be interested in participating in domain names regulation? My NGO doesn't even do internet stuff. I do health stuff. I do educational stuff, roads, civil transportation. Who knows? So that's the first thing I want to repeat, Sam, and I want to repeat the master plan on is explaining internet as ecosystem as a facilitator of NGOs work. It will be cheaper for them. They will have new opportunities, new places to get funded. I think the master plan is pretty clear on that, but first task on the engagement. Second one is the, as Sam put in his words, is rights and obligations in the internet ecosystem. If you want to be part of that ecosystem and take advantages of the tools that it offers, it is it makes sense as a moral, ethical, and at least human way to say, well, you have rights on internet, privacy, access, freedom of expression. You also have obligations. For instance, if you are a public advocate, then you will have a bit of participation on the creation of the rules that allows you to have freedom of speech. It doesn't mean it's mandatory. It can be as they call a natural obligation. It's there, it's not mandatory, but if you fulfill it, you will be fulfilling an obligation. It's not altruist work. You know, you're not doing it out of nowhere. There is a natural obligation to that. That would explain people why they have to engage in internet ecosystem, and therefore, then we can start explaining why ICANN is relevant and why they should be part of ICANN. And that means creating also a space, and NPOC is a space that has a limited space for now. But it's clear, for example, in developing countries where NGOs have a hard time finding funding, volunteers, or just information about ICANN, well, it would be interesting to see a space inside NPOC, especially for developing NGOs. And I say that coming from a developing country that, fortunately, is not in the worst part of developing. We have a decent internet ecosystem, and people is pretty knowledgeable about it. And even though we are having a lot of trouble, so imagine if we had to move to a region where developing is much further, the amount of work we have to do there to get them involved. And with that comes the tools. ICANN has a lot of tools that NGOs could use to do ICANN work, to do policy development. I'm talking, for instance, the Adobe connection that we can use for NGOs to say the word across the region. They won't have to just organize on themselves for the first time a full seminar and host it in the region. They could start reaching out their voice through the Adobe connection, and they would be have an online exposure. Just an example. To end this, of course, I think there are two things. I support some cross community, if you would like, or cross cross community involvement when calling IPC, ISP, people from GAC, who knows. Bringing other relevant actors could really enhance or enrich our outcome. And for last is, there are a lot of NGOs inside ICANN that are not on NPOC. A lot. The fellowship is full of people of the NGOs looking for a place to be. And NPOC has more than enough tasks to assign and to share. I'm the perfect example. I mean, I'm from the fellowship. NPOC reached to the fellowship. I came to NPOC back in Buenos Aires a year ago, and they told me, if you would like to work with us, here we have a lot of things you could do. I think we have to repeat that as much as we can. For instance, I don't know, we've been talking about the business constituency newspaper or their outreach, and I was like, okay, I built like 3 or 4 magazines back in Argentina. Most of them were student magazines during college and everything. For me, it would be impossible to do it all by myself, but I know a lot of fellows that would be really happy to help NPOC and their NGOs, fellows, that they would be really happy to help NPOC to build a newspaper, you know, of NGOs' involvement in ICANN. And we don't have only the fellowship. The NCSG as whole has a lot of NGOs. The NGO that I'm representing right now in NPOC has been for years in the NCSG and in the NCUC. Why weren't they in NPOC? So I think we also have to look inside the house. We don't have, we have a lot of NGOs inside ICANN to also look at. I think that pretty much sums everything I wanted to say.
Thank you, Martin. Rudy speaking. I'm picking up two elements out of what you have been saying for preparation for the agenda of the Singapore meeting. One is, it's clear that we NPOC need to be more clear about what we expect from NGOs, first of all, and illustrate why we exist. You were saying that what is relevant to them to be with ICANN, I would rather say why it is relevant to be with NPOC before talking about ICANN. I think it's better to use an entity or a definition or a name that sounds not so big, because what's my experience is with regards NGOs, when you express names and brands and that sounds big, they stay away. They are afraid of. They feel for themselves, we don't have the power to participate in such a big structure, so why should we? That's rather the reason why I would say, let's have NPOC being relevant to the NGOs, first of all, before talking about why they should participate in ICANN, because then we lose them again. They get lost in ICANN, we get lost in ICANN, so they will get lost also. I think that's quite important that we are able to highlight the relevance of NPOC. And when they feel that that's relevant, they will participate in the higher levels, the higher layers. At least that's my perception. And the second one, it's about the ICANN tools. And I'm picking that one up because there is a specific proposal on the table for NGOs through the .ngo.org, where they are going to help NGOs to have their web presence and so on. And that's one of the reasons why I'm picking this one up with what I said earlier, is that we need to step out of ICANN with NPOC 2 and go outside and find coalition with the PIR, with other structures, with Extensia in regards organization of events to make NPOC relevant to the NGO world. Because actually we are just a silo inside the ICANN structure, and that doesn't help us. Many people are afraid of ICANN. It's a lot of work, it's a lot of engagement, and you don't get anything back from it. That's the perception. So that's why I would like to pick up for our discussions in Singapore, how can we get closer to the close environment to ICANN, like a PR and so on. So for myself, I think it's good if I can find a way to get to the other structures such as SPIR and invite them to a meeting or constituency day meeting in Singapore to explain the proposal that they have for NGOs so that we do it together. Of course, but it's off the to-do list, the action list that I want to create out of this session. Laurie, I'm passing the mic to you.
Hello, Laurie Schulman. I agree with what's being said, but I caution against speaking at too high a level. What I'm constantly hearing is engagement, relevancy, free speech. I think without getting down to nuts and bolts, what does this really mean? It means that when you go to register a domain name, it's very likely that your identity may actually be phished. Okay, in an open whois environment. What does it mean from a policy perspective? Well, there's a working group in ICANN today that's talking about whether or not there should be any special considerations given to NGOs for protecting their names in the new GTLD system. It means, and I disagree about the new GTLD systems not being operational. I think they're very operational, particularly for larger NGOs that have well-known names, and for these issues of squatting, name collision, and all the other barriers, and I don't want to call them barriers, but hurdles that are being put in front of delegating and implementing new GTLDs. So what I would really like to see us get away from is speaking at so high a level that we don't reach that practical person. I'm a newsletter publisher on the internet. Yes, what happened in Paris now affects me. Can somebody find out who I am on a thicker than who is? If that's what we need to be talking about. That's harder to do, actually. It's very easy to sit in a room and speak at the high level. It's much more difficult to sit down and have people give concrete examples, but that's exactly what we have to do. Otherwise, you're going to get no buy-in. Why should any nonprofit donate any of their valuable staff time to what we're doing unless what we're doing is 100% relevant to their day-to-day operations?
Thank you, Laurie. It's indeed, it's something that I was thinking about of trying to have a session which explains the value of a domain name to an NGO, because that's indeed what they don't know most often. And I think that that's one of the big advantages of being part of NPOC, that we can learn them.
Rudy, this is Klaus for the record. This is actually part of the presentation I'm doing next Wednesday.
I know, but for the record, it's important that we are putting this in the list of actions because the recordings are available. It's an archive. We didn't have that good archive of NPOC from the past. I want to build a good archive, so if tomorrow I leave as a chair, that there is something they we can build upon. That's the reason why I'm trying to repeat it. Joan, you have the floor now.
Great. It's Joan for the record. I'm sorry, I don't have a cold or anything. It's allergies, so I apologize for my tears and sniffles. What I'm hearing, I really like what I'm hearing. I have one clarification to ask before I say what I have on my mind. I like the idea of, I have to wait for them because they need to answer. No, but I need to ask you a question, that's why, sorry. I really like the idea of promoting NPOC as opposed to ICANN. I really like that, except the word committee. Because
we don't use it. It's
consistency. Okay, you just use the word consistency. Okay.
Not operational consistency.
See? Okay. So the C is constituents.
The C is concerned.
Right. But what I'm saying, what? Okay. So what I'm trying to say, I guess, is when you go to a not-for-profit and you use certain words, they'll ask you, well, where do you fit in, right? So and so that's the whole idea of where ICANN would come up. But going back to the whole idea of promoting MPOC, I think is such an excellent idea to build membership. I really do, especially if we take the aspects that we're going to educate them. A lot of not-for-profit have issues around board development and governances, and we hear today very much about the roles and responsibility and authority. We can take those roles to educate. Operating toolkits, you know, sometimes people are running organizations, they actually don't know how to run them. You know, they go day to day. What is their strategies? How do you do strategic plan, your budgeting, your projections, your funding models, things like that? I think that if we start to say that this is where we're going to fill that gap, then you can have a lot of buy-in for not-for-profit in terms of engaging them and encouraging them to become members. Obviously, some of the things that has to happen, and obviously we're ICANN, so we have to really focus a lot on the value of the domain name. I think that really comes in huge. I mean, that's where we will be different than a lot of community organizations that are doing some of this other work as well. And we don't have to reinvent a lot of this curriculum. You can just link to other organizations and other toolkits, right? Yeah, and I think the power of the whole idea of funding, some of the NGOs for the domain name, the .ngo wants to give funding to not-for-profits as well. I think I heard that, but no, that won't happen. But even the whole idea of project-based funding, a lot of organizations don't know how to manage that. I know in Canada we don't. There's a lot of NGOs that don't get operational funds anymore. Sorry.
Just as a comment to it, yes,
yeah.
Crowd-based funding is one which is proposed for .ngo and .ong. I think this is a choice of them to do that. My only observation is that this is not sustainable and doesn't work for the long term.
Right.
And if you have...
we won't promote it.
No, it works. It works if you have 50 organizations and you've only got a certain amount of money floating around.
Right.
And instead, with what happens with .ong and .ngo is instead of dividing that pot by 50 organizations, you divide it by 50,000 organizations.
Right. Okay.
What should happen, in my opinion, is. There are a lot of mechanisms domain-based mechanisms like building online communities with services and things like that around a domain or around a topic which are sustainable and actually work very well. We've got one example with Ecotier in India, yeah, where basically the whole thing is maintaining itself by that. So just with regard to funding, sorry.
Well,
about that.
I just thought that that's a huge issue for not-for-profits is funding and managing fund. Not just, it's one thing to write a proposal for it; it's another thing to manage it, because that's how they get into trouble a lot of times. But I guess what I'm saying is that we can play a role in helping them with that. That was the point more than anything else. It sounds like we need to create a hub. Like forums where people can dialogue with each other and give advice and give resources and, you know, I don't know if that's of interest, but it's always a suggestion anyway. Anyway, overall, what I see is that we can really play a fantastic role in encouraging NGOs and civil society to work together and to become part of MPOC. But one of the things that I really love as a starting point is this whole idea of going to the members of ICANN and getting them involved, because they're already part of ICANN, right? It just seems like an easy thing to do. Now, my other question, and I'll wrap up because this is my last question. Well, actually, I have two questions. I'm not going to Singapore, unfortunately, because I didn't know if I had travel support or not. And okay, so that's number one. And number two is, will we be able to apply for funding on our own to organizations and manage funds on our own? So that's a question I wanted to ask. You don't have to answer right now, but I'd like to know if we could do that, if we have that capacity. And that's it for me.
This is Lori. On the travel support issue, that's really odd, because just this week I got a message from ICANN that they said was originally dated December 16th that I don't ever remember receiving. I said, oh, I had been approved for support when I knew that I wasn't going. I never put my name in for support. You were supposed to be that support. I would check to see if, or that shouldn't be, because my space.
Yeah, but that's again Rudy speaking. It's again there are some logistic problems based on the fact that we have this Washington D.C. Meeting that took a lot of energy away. The rescheduling of the Marrakesh meeting into the Singapore meeting is also a very annoying mechanism that they are going through. I will pick this one up with Robert Hoggart. I will pick it up with him and say, look, this lot. Yeah, but first, I will ask her to join me, but it's my duty to convince ICANN that tomorrow they change the travel slot of Laurie to Joan. As simply as that, but I need to do it in a formal way, otherwise it doesn't work. I know. I've been through a lot of misery already, and it's... Yeah, I know. So I'm coming back to what you brought up, helping them with funding. Helping them with funding could also just be guiding them.
Yes.
For instance, the experience that we have with the Internet Ombudsman, it's a service that we started in 2005 with Internet Society Belgium. It's still a success today because it brings us, first, new membership, but secondly, knowledge of what's going wrong, what people expect to be helped. So that's a starting point where you can say, okay, look, we are not going to fund you, but we can help you and give you addresses you need to go to get the funding for your structure. And I'm essentially talking to the developing world, where it's much more difficult to get the right person, get the right organization, get the right form, and eventually help them with templates of how they can address an organization. I'm talking about the UN and so on. ECOSOC, there is a lot that we can use for that. Yes, Sam? Mike?
Sam, can we finish around the table? Because I want to jump into this stuff.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, but I'm allowing Adrian also to, because I see that he takes a lot of notes. And if we want value from him, if we want value back from him, we need to provide as much as we can. And I think we were able to give you as many input as possible. The own sponsoring is another issue where we have already been picking up, and that's something we will discuss in Singapore, certainly.
May I just say one thing? I think that if we promote that we're an organization that is creating value for not-for-profits, which includes this whole education, funding, and tools, it will be better than saying we're developing them or, you know, we're funding them. Anyway.
This is Adrian from Extensia. The reason I'm copious notes.
Miriam or Glenn, can you please pick this up? Just 1 second. I'm trying to pick this up because our both people are from ICANN staff that should normally will be able to provide you. I cannot reach them at this moment.
So can you hear us?
Yes,
I can hear you.
Are we back on and connected?
Yes, you are.
Are we recording?
Yes, you are.
Okay, thank you. Could you please make next time an announcement? Thank you.
So, Adrian, you have the floor now.
Thank you, Rudy. So, as I was saying, I'm making copious notes because I'm slightly new to this environment and I want to make sure my understanding is correct. And I'd like to start my points with questions more than statements, just for further clarity. And one of my main questions is, who does NPOC target in engagement? Can we define NPOC constituents and also define secondary constituents such as I'm guessing that when we say constituents we mean NGOs, but my experience in Africa is that people wear more than one hat and they may be an NGO but they may also be involved in for-profit organizations as well. And then you've got organizations like the incubation hubs. The heads of the incubation hubs themselves could be NGOs, but the organizations within those incubation hubs who are not yet profitable, should there be another segment called not yet for profit, not yet profitable, should these organizations not benefit from NPOX?
Mariam, can you please pick this up urgently?
Telling him the password. Can you hear Mariam now?
Yes, I'm in the room now. Hello?
Mariam, are we back in the room?
Yes, we are back in the room. Apologies for that.
We've got other people in the background talking still. So should I continue or repeat?
Yeah, if you can please just repeat.
Okay, so my questions were in regards to NPOC constituency, what that constituency is, how is it defined and how should it be, or should it be redefined in a way that includes not only the NGOs but also people who have multiple responsibilities and organizations like the incubation hubs who may themselves be NGOs but their members may not be. They, being startups, will not yet be profitable, so should there be a category of not yet profitable? So should the constituency of NPOC be better defined, or can it be better defined, and are there any suggestions around that? And then in addition, with, for instance, governments, are they additional people that should be engaged within the NPOC process? Because
please, time out. We have an echo. Can you please check to mute the mics that are not in this room so that we don't have this echo? So do we still have echo?
Yeah.
Do we still have echo? Yeah, we have. I'm just not repeating myself. Still echo?
now, please. Are you finished?
Hi, Adrian. Can you hear anything?
I don't hear any sound coming from the other line.
And it's still connected, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
We are still connected, but we are getting a lot of echo.
Oh.
I don't hear the echo here.
No, it's very clear here as well.
Sorry, we've decided because of all these disruptions, we cannot hold the meeting. We have a substantial echo, and when we don't have an echo, we are interrupted in the meeting. This way, we cannot have a responsible constituency meeting. For that reason, the meeting has decided to stop the recording, to stop the transmission.
It looks like we don't have echo anymore.
So, a last check. Do we still have echo? No? Is the recording going?
Yes, the recording is still on, Rudy.
Okay, thank you, Mariam. We will continue back on online.
Okay, well, let me continue very briefly. So, as NPOC looks outward, it needs an inclusive operational definition of who the community is. And basically, if they turn up, on occasion we'll say, you should be over there. But most of the time, there's grounds for a discussion so that they should be in. That's point one. Point two, to illustrate that, the registrars in Africa, I met with a group of them, and their complaint to me was, ICANN doesn't listen to us with our problems. It outreaches to try and get us involved. I mean, we've signed these contracts with the registries. But the language of our contracts is such that we can't get financing and we can't get local insurance, but we're required to have financing to operate and we're required to have insurance to meet the conditions of the contract. But the language is wrong. Now, so they fall between the cracks there. And technically, we're not supposed to be helping them, but there's no reason why we couldn't champion some of those concerns to get them on the table inside ICANN. The last point is to come back to some points that Joan made. When we talk to NGOs everywhere, even in developed countries, their internal resources and their internal capacities are highly restricted unless they're that very small elite. So around capacity building, board training, capacity building, the ability to write a proposal. I mean, I have spent 25 years with an Indian group and have not been able to get them to train a single person to write a proposal, and they, after 2.5 decades, they still believe it's the ability to get photographs standing next to the right person, period. I'm dealing with the same thing with groups in Africa, and what I'm now doing is saying to the organization, give me the names of 3 young people who seem to be interested in what you're doing. And I kind of reach through the organization. And some of what we're going to do is going to have to be like that. The organization says, yes, we've joined NPOC. We have to then dig into that organization and say, give us 3 or 4 people. We may have to bring them in to train them through the fellowships. We may have to do it some other way. But we have to find those people with the fire in their belly, you know, and not just looking for a ticket and say, okay, we can work with you. And what we work with them on initially is going to be more along Jones thing. Very broadly defined. Very broadly defined.
And adding to that, in Argentina, I'm working right now, or starting to work, with a few persons that dedicate to, if you would like, education on internet governance. For instance, one of the organizations that I'm beginning talks, let's say that, about these concerns of MPOC is the South School of Governance. These are people full of fire in their belly, as Sam said. Most of them, or a lot of them, are involved in NGOs. A lot of them, even if the NGO is not entirely about internet, it can be about human rights, are already experts in internet matters. So I believe that we have also, I wouldn't call deep pockets, but I would say we do have some sort of highways, if you like, around different regions. I know a few highways in my region, Latin America. I know a few places where people meet. My university hosted Fadi one year ago. He went to Buenos Aires, and it was incredible to watch people from the university really being interested in ICANN, people who have never seen anything about it. Some of them didn't even knew really about internet governance at all. So I do think that if we think smart, if we really are smart and we do our job correctly in researching the strategic points, the NGOs, relations, or NGO members that we are trying to reach out are also going to start in pop out if we just look in the right place. So as he said, he asks the NGOs to point out people that are already interested in this. I would like to add to that approach that there are special places around the world where actually the members pop themselves. They're right there screaming for opportunities like this to appear. Just to add up a little bit on some comment.
And to clarify the reason for my question, it relates to how, from an Extensia perspective, we can help, as I see it, and that is we're not a massive company. We have a good reach, and we have some very good connections in Africa specifically. We've built up relations over the last 13 years with governments and with operators and with key players in telecoms and ICT. So the whole internet governance side of things there's a convergence in the whole telecoms and ICT space, and that's brought internet governance into the framework of where we had more strength. But we've been, for the last couple of years, encouraged ICANN's participation at the event because we recognise that this is the next part of the convergence. So AFRINIC and ICANN from Africa and others, ZACR, we work very closely with on the .Africa you know, we supported their .Africa launch and allowed them a good platform at our event. But my point is that a lot of the people who attend our events, and for this year, for instance, we have four events that we have in our schedule. We have one, which is our annual event that's been going for 13 years, which is the IAD Summit, where we have ministers, regulators, service providers. We do invite NGOs to the event. We invite incubator hubs. It's the Innovation Africa Digital Summit. And I can send you all of the details on it so you can see. But we would not be in a position to invite thousands of NGOs. And if you wanted to hit... And this is why I was asking that question, really, because as a point of engagement, is it fair or is it reasonable, is it within the possibilities for MPOC that we should engage, let's say, on a per-country level, two or three, which might include the Minister of ICT, and it might include maybe an incubation hub, maybe an NGO umbrella, and there are a number of NGO umbrella organizations in Africa, and have a trickle-down effect, because for us to impose on the small NGO the concepts of they need to be involved in internet governance, how much they'll listen to us is minimal. They don't even speak their language, never mind their language. Even, you know, if you know what I mean, there's two language barriers. There's the ICANN language, and then there's English, which isn't always the first language. But if you're dealing with that higher level and allow it to trickle down from them, they speak the language, they know the people, and they have the respect of those people in the first place, whereas we're fighting to get that respect as NPOC. Who's NPOC? Who's ICANN? ICANN, if you don't know ICANN, it sounds like a rah-rah ICANN kind of a thing. You know, it's, can you? Well, you can what? You know, this. We assume everybody knows who ICANN is. They don't. In Africa... I deal with the operators and the ministers, and I'll ask them, do you know what ICANN is? Do you know what internet governance is? We have a whole session on our event in, which is coming up in Victoria Falls, on critical internet infrastructures. Even vendors are saying to us, I want to talk on that. And I say, it's not about networks. It's critical internet, the infrastructure of the internet. They just think the internet is, not that it, you know, it's managed. So... and in England as well, you know. It's not a great conversation for a pub, because you sound like you're preaching, you know. Yeah. So that's really why I'm asking that question. When you outreach, who do you outreach to?
No, you answer first.
Turn your mic off. Okay, thank you, Adrian, Rudy, for the transcript. I already noted a few hours ago the idea of inviting governments to engage together with NGOs, especially in developing countries, for one of the actions that we are going to do with GKPF together. Indeed, I think that, especially in developing countries, when you are able to engage a minister, the minister afterwards will be very proud to go to his community, his or her community, say, look, I have something to offer to you. Because that's what they are looking for. I engaged myself with the Azerbaijan Minister of Telecommunication, Mr. Abazov, to start, to kick off the Internet Society chapter over there. And I engaged myself to help them the next 2 years to do that. So... they are looking for something that they offer themselves, a win-win position. And that's, I think, critical for developing countries. If we want to get NGOs involved, we cannot reach out to all of them. It's impossible. But the minister can do that. The department that is responsible for engagement and helping NGOs or even startups, but... because that's, for me, and it doesn't need to be a registered NGO. That's what the package of the .dot NGO ONG is going to offer. They are going to offer the .dot NGO domain when you're a registered NGO. I'm still trying to understand how you're going to do that. But I'm coming back to that specific element. Have you any idea how we, NPOC, could help NGOs in being recognized as an NGO? Because that's where you bring an added value to them that they, that nobody else is going to offer them. And that's maybe the way of getting to a minister and say, look, we know that there is an issue. Help your NGOs to get into a registered status. What is needed in your country? What is the template? What is the format? What are the ways to do? And we will help through our organization, helping them also that there is a need to be registered. NPOC, if you want to be a member of NPOC, you need to be a registered one. Okay, well, look, this is the two-way direction of getting them in. At least that's my personal thought. I don't know what your reflection is on that.
It's a difficult thing to define, because NGO just means non-governmental organization. So that can be a for-profit company. That could be MTN or Vodacom. They're not government. They're for-profit, though. So this is why I'm saying, what's the definition? Is it not-for-profit organization? Is it NGO, non-governmental organization?
If you want to look, this is Laurie, if you want to look at it strictly in terms of what the NPOC charter is, it's non-profit organization at the moment. I mean, that goes to a discussion that we started earlier about charter issues. But right now, from a very practical perspective, and I don't have a definition in front of me, but from my memory, it's really talking about social welfare organizations that are not organized or operating in any sort of commercial context. And there's a layer to this beyond just what the NPOC charter says. It's getting through the NCSG admission process as well, because the way our constituency works, it's a top-down, in effect. There's the NCSG. An organization or an individual would have to be approved as an NCSG member. And then if you're an NGO, well, we'll say a nonprofit to keep the context clear, then you have to apply separately to MPLC. If you're an individual, then you don't qualify for MPOC under the current charter, and you would be directed to the non-commercial users constituency, although I would argue if you're a small business owner under sort of the context that we see in Africa, a strong argument could be made that they would be directed toward the business constituency. And that was part of what Marilyn Cade was discussing today, is this sort of cross-functional way of looking at tasks that, you know, we're very U.S. oriented in that regard. And I will tell you that the MPLC charter, when it was written, the prime movers of that were larger U.S.-based nonprofits and U.S.-based attorneys. At the time, it seemed like a good idea, because the issues that NCUC were addressing, again, were very high-level human rights related issues versus a more practical operational level for what I would call nonprofits, again, to keep it in a context. And we do agree right now that a nonprofit is a social welfare organization, because there is a specific prohibition in the NCSG charter against trade associations, unless those trade associations are associations of social welfare individuals or organizations. My organization isn't a good example of that. I am a U.S. 501c3. We do not do grassroots fundraising. We're an educational organization. We raise our money doing publishing. So arguably, our biggest competitors are actually for-profit publishers rather than, let's say, other nonprofits vying for the same grant dollar or individual donation.
Okay. Everything that Laurie said was correct. There are a couple of wrinkles there. One is that in the NPOC charter, it does refer to professional associations. And the other side of the non-commercial house says, well, no, you can't include a professional association of lawyers, that's trying to improve its capacity as lawyers, and we're saying, yes, you could, because that's not them practicing law. That's them improving their understanding of the Internet and so forth. So there's that history. But apart from that history, there is absolutely nothing to prevent NPOC from turning around 180 degrees and saying, we're going to cooperate with the nonprofit structure. We're going to learn the lessons that have been learned. I am just finishing off, and she probably will defend her dissertation during the ICANN meetings in Argentina, supervising a dissertation on ICT projects in Argentina, grassroots projects where the involvement of the government at the provincial level was absolutely essential, because the government had to learn, had to understand what the issues were at the grassroots level, and the government, the champions inside the government who emerged as a result of that dialogue, the kind of people that you would say bring into these events, they were responsible for opening up policy windows at the provincial level that allowed things to change at the provincial level, that allowed these grassroots things to take place. So when we turn around 180 degrees and say, we're not trying to recruit you to be on a policy development committee inside ICANN, and we don't want you here to be on a cross-working group or a this or a that or a this or that, we're here to help you raise your level of understanding about what it means to live in the Internet ecosystem as part of your existence, we want anybody in the government who's prepared to listen to be there, because after they've listened, they may just go down the hall and say to somebody else, hey, you better go listen to this. I mean, we did simple things. I mean, I didn't, but the Canadian government and the project that I just revised a dissertation on, just getting a provincial governor in Argentina, together with a provincial governor in Canada, where the provincial minister had done it, made a huge difference at the grassroots level there. You know, and it's not about going in and reciting chapter and verse of our charter and the ICANN mission and so forth. It's getting right down to say, okay, why are we here today in this room? What is it important to discuss? Right. And I, you know, and sort of back in the African context, the churn, as you know, in the African NGO community is incredible. Last year, one-third of registered NGOs in South Africa were deregistered. Another one-third were put on notice. Almost all of them were in that boat because they don't have resources to file their papers. It's that basic. It's not that they've run away with the money. Actually, if they ran away with the money, they probably also filed their papers to protect themselves. But it's we have to guard against this, and I see it in big bold print in ICANN. Immediately they go, no, we can't do that because it's not part of code. And you go, we go in the hall and do that. We go out there and have the conversation. And if you say, well, you can't have a conversation in the hall because that's likely to be private, then we'll go hold it in the central square with megaphones. Anybody can hear. Anybody can come. Right? And all we have to do at the core of it is to say, to use a phrase that Fadi used to use but he's quit using, what are our core values here? And just say, you know, and identify those. NPOC's core values, to make sure that in particular, civil society understands what you need to worry about in terms of the rights and obligations of being a citizen in the Internet ecosystem. And in particular, that's important for you if you're an NGO, because that's part of your mission. And I don't care if you're an NGO that's trying to do biodiversity in agriculture or health or pensions or whatever. But we have to take that broad view, tease those people forward who will become the leaders in this, you know, who walk out of the meeting and we may never hear from them again until they win the Nobel Prize.
Thank you, Sam. I have Joan in the queue, and then I'm looking to the clock. It's close to 6. I asked if we could extend for 15 minutes, and it seems that it's going to be allowed. To round up, I know, Laurie, you want to get...
That's okay. I'll try to be quick. It's a really good question about the definition of NGOs. I run a not-for-profit myself, and we've always used the definition as provided by the UN. And I'll read it. I brought it up just so that you're clear what when I use it, that's what I was meaning. And maybe this is good conversation that we actually define what we mean by it. But the UN uses it as a non-governmental organization, also referred to as civil society, is a not-for-profit group, principally independent from government, which is organized on a local, national, or international level to address issues in support of the public good. And that's how I've always used not-for-profit or NGOs, usually in a not-for-profit basis. So,
what is important there, and in our context, is this doesn't say anything about how this organization funds itself. So, a not-for-profit, for example, can be somebody who is running a business and using this proceeds for these kinds of things, as long as there are no private profiteering. I didn't say that. I was thinking it. But I think that is important, and that is the key. And Jonathan, Adrian, I think that the whole thing, it also depends really on the outcome, on the effect, and not on the letter of the law. What it's here, it's operational concerns. And that operational concerns can include the government, because the government implements it. Yeah, it's what's happening here in ICANN. Everybody is drumming on not-for-profit and forgets the operational concerns.
One sentence, and that is the governments of the world and the private sector of the world are telling the NGO sector of the world, generate your own revenue base.
Yes.
Generate your own revenue base. And so we have to say to them, they're generating their own revenue base, so you can't say they are no longer a nonprofit. No. You can't have it both ways. And so we have to be very elastic here.
Yes, although, thank you, Sam. And before I allow John to come in, Rudy speaking, I would even say that a not-for-profit cannot continue to exist if they don't have revenue. That's the basis of revenue doesn't mean benefit. And that's the definition that we are using most often in Europe when we talk about the not-for-profit. It's there can be no profit for the members of that organization, not in financial, not in kind. That's the definition. So by taking that one as our basic element of discussion of what is an NGO for us, or what is the organization that we allow to be a member, because that's where we need to go back to, is who can we allow to be a member of NPOC? That's our goal. We need membership. Otherwise, we don't exist in ICANN. We need to be very clear. That's a clear goal. The more members we have, the more voting rights we get. And that's the only way that NPOC can move upwards in recognition and power in the GNSO Council in itself. We cannot get councillors voted if we don't have enough votes.
I agree with you completely, and what I want to talk about here is strategy. There are two ways of getting NPOC members. One is to go fishing with a fishing pole, and the other is to go fishing with a net. What I'm proposing is you go fishing with a net. You go throw the net over as big a group as you can, and so you get 150 people turning up for something, and they're government people, they're incubator people hoping to be the next Bill Gates, they're whomever. And out of that 100 people, you get two that end up being good NPOC candidates. The other is you get a fishing pole, and you spend all your time trying to figure out what kind of bait should I put on the hook.
And it takes you 6 years to land one fish.
My name is Klaus Stoll. I was born on Daisy Hill Hirschbach before my father and mother loved me dearly. Adrian, when you speak, could you also, because I'm trying to get some movement, some progress going, we can talk about definition as much as we want. We really should move to a point where you can say, from what I heard tentatively today, yeah, this is where I think there are the win-win situations between what I'm doing and what you are doing. Yeah, and during the next date tomorrow, we've got clear meetings, Angola, things like that. And for example, are we using the format of a webinar at these meetings and engage with the NGOs and the minister and everything to make it cross-culture? And what do we get out of it? What I'm trying to say is, let's move a little bit away from, of course, you have questions, there are a lot of answers, but that we also try to move a little bit into the more concrete planning area.
Okay, yes. Adrian again. And seriously, yes. We have, as I said, a number of events coming up this year. My thoughts, if I'm correct in what I'm saying and the agreement is around the table, one quick thing, I was thinking, should not be an affiliate membership, which includes governments, who are not going to be actual members, but they'll be people that we'll use in order to have that trickle-down effect. A minister can't be a member of MPOC, but can they be an affiliate member, which means that they can, or something kind of a member, which means they're a partner or a something in, yeah? And that would open the door for me to say to you, at the extension events, we can set a framework within those events where it enables workshops and it enables engagement processes within the events that are currently running, which means that we don't have to organize an event just on internet governance where you're only going to get people who are already involved and interested in that anyway. Whereas with our wider event, we can make sure we invite the right people to look at the future of development of telecoms and ICT in Africa and how it affects them, and at the same time have the elements of internet governance covered within that event. Because you'll get people there that wouldn't go to just an internet governance event.
Thank you, Adrian. Maybe I'm picking up on your question about can the government be an affiliate member to NPOC? We have to be very clear. That's a little bit in conflict with the structure of the GAC. What I would rather use as wording is supporting member, where they don't have any right to vote or whatever.
Right.
But affiliate, it's again a discussion about why are they in the GAC? And if you start picking up people from the GAC, you know that others are going to start and kick us out. So I'm giving the mic to Joan now, and then to Sam, and then to Klaus, sorry.
Yes, that was my point. It's Joan speaking. That was my point, is maybe we could have agree on levels of membership, and government being a non-voting member. And I wanted to clarify one thing. We're talking about Africa. That's not the only – is that our first strategy, or since we do have someone that has some contacts, that's the other thing we should be talking about, this broad net. Where do we want to start? Where do we want to go? Where do we want to start for the membership? Right. So anyway, I think maybe the good point is that we have some levels of membership.
Not only membership, also partnership. Yes, we have to separate things extremely. But, for example, NPOC for me is the policy level. But NPOC has members like GKPF, which are doing the execution of that policy, because and that is important. So, for example, the minister can become a member of GKPF. And through GKPF, he's basically a partner of NPOC. whilst he can't be an NPOC member. So we should say it quite clearly. NPOC is a policy level, and the membership of NPOC has the executive level.
Thank you, Klaus. Rudy speaking. Just very shortly, and again, I have to repeat it. It's my duty. We need to clearly separate. There is NPOC, for which we are here. There is GKPF, that is a member of NPOC. And indeed, GKPF is going to take up a large task of what is needed to be done, but it's needed to be done in a way that it doesn't seem that it is ICANN that is doing this, because then everybody stays away. That's for Adrian to clarify. The mission that we took up is from GKPF to go as an NGO to NGOs. That's the first mission. So I think that's important that we make that distinction. There is a separation. There is NPOC, there is GKPF. GKPF will do a lot of what is needed, outreach and so on. Sam?
Yeah, I was going to add, I've had to do these kinds of things for 30 or 40 years in different settings at international, federal, and local levels. And one of the more flexible models is to simply say we've got a constituency group called the Friends of, and inside the Friends of there are special interest groups that are self-constituting. There may be four or five vice ministers or whatever. There may be some people in health and within that group they're carrying on a dialogue that's visible to the rest of the group and visible here, and we come up with ideas for partnerships and collaboration. And we spend virtually no time arguing about, well, should we change the charter of NPOC inside ICANN so that this group can join? The group doesn't need to join. It needs to do its work. Yeah. And so it's that keeping your eye on the mission and the vision and having structures, you know, it's a kind of form follows the function process, rather than, and as you'll see when we're in meetings at ICANN, an inordinate amount of time is spent on fighting about structure.
And one brief note is obviously Accenture is not a not-for-profit organization, so, you know, by rights, Accenture can't be a member of NPOC on that basis.
But Adrian, Rudy speaking, but Adrian, you probably are engaged in other structures. I don't see you being just Extensia. I see you as being more active in different areas. So there we will find a way to get you in. As I said, you can join and be partner of GKPF, which you are. And through that, you have a voice that you can raise. So there is no issue at that point. And that's to the point of to close this discussion about membership and actions, because Joan is our membership committee chair, and I'm counting on her input and expertise on membership levels. I think it's important that for the Singapore meeting, we would be able to try to have a raw draft of what kind of NGOs or organizations we are looking for, that we have a vast group from which we can start and say, okay, this is the net that we're going to use to catch them. So if you want to know which kind of net you're using for fish, if you're using a net with these holes in it for small fish, it doesn't work. So that's the reason why I'm asking Joan to try to figure out, and you can count on our help anyway, to figure out maybe three types of membership groups that we would look for, so that it enables us also to trigger down the techniques for the phishing. Another aspect that I'm just checking for our Singapore meeting, but I will put it on mail anyway. We need to go through the other misery of membership. It's an actual status, I would say, standby, because nothing is moving, and we know the reason why it's not moving. Maybe, Laurie, you can point.
Hi, it's Laura Schulman. We can go offline and I can explain to you sort of what's been happening the last year and a half on membership generally at the NCST EC level. But I did want to make a recommendation. Now that our MPOC leadership has changed, I would really recommend that when the announcements come out that welcome the new non-for-profit members, that you immediately jump on that and send them links to MPOC forms if you haven't already done so. I put in a suggested change in format to the NCSG application that more clearly delineates the differences between the two constituencies and encourages people to really think about which constituency they want to join. Under the NCSG rules, of course, you don't have to join any, or you can join two, or you can join one. So we're just trying to get as many qualified institutions into MPOC as we can. But the rest of it, the more nitty-gritty of it, I actually just think it'd be more productive to talk to you one-on-one.
Okay. Thank you. Laurie, I have another person on the call for Martin.
Yes, two quick notes. On the subject that Laurie brought up, I'm not going to say a lot, but just going to say that the NCSG structure, I think, is problematic regarding that. It allows NGOs to just go through the things without coming to MPOC. And that is clearly a problem to MPOC that is trying to gather NGOs. And I think this is a structural problem. It's nobody's fault. It's just when it was designed, it was a flaw, and that allows for the system to not properly work. And I think that's one of the things we should push the agenda in NCSG and in other GNSO levels. Today we almost touched the subject, or we did, but I do think that NPOC should be brought up a little bit more. I think we can continue this tomorrow or in the cocktail offline. And the other thing is NCSG and NPOC, and I believe NCUC as well, allows NGOs to have more than one associated. Only one vote. But for example, in the case of my NGO, Ageia Densi, which is mainly an educational and research NGO regarding internet governance or internet ecosystem, we have one representative official for NCSG and NCUC. That's the same person. And I'm only for MPOC. And we could have another one of my NGO inside MPOC alone. In this case, I will only have both in MPOC, and the other person would be just assisting in the other things that MPOC does, as I do in NCSG. In NCSG, I don't have a vote for my NGO, but I could easily participate in a working group in NCSG in the name of my NGO. It's really confusing, but the point is one NGO can have more than one people engaging as long as there's only one people voting for that NGO.
Yes, thank you, Martin. It's an issue, Rudy speaking. It's an issue that I'm already taking up for a next XCOM call. It's about the representation and voting rights of members in NCSG Global, because that's still a big question on how that is validated. Normally, your organization has two votes. As you're each small organization has two votes. So it could be that you have a vote and the other person also another vote. That's another solution. Still, having Laurie aside me, the whole chart discussion is something that we are going to try to bring back to the Singapore meeting. I'm going back to the Ombudsman to get clarification of the process after our discussions with the Ombudsman in Los Angeles, because nothing has happened and there is still a big conflict in only one point or article already of the NCSG charter. It's about the EC structure and the election of the chair. There is a conflict in the text. If you go through it, you will see it very clearly. Klaus, you have the last word before closing.
Are we clear? Is it right that we have a meeting as NPOC with Fadi tomorrow?
We have a meeting with Fadi with NCSG together. So
we don't have a...
there is no separate meeting.
But we still have, based on the discussion of today, Sam and Martin dropped off. I'm going to ask priority for them to ask Fadi. So we will have our right to speak and ask Fadi. Be prepared. So I would like to thank you all for this meeting, very interesting meeting. We make progress in trying to understand who we are. That's still what I can try to do. And thanks to Adrian also for helping us in getting a better perspective. And thanks to staff, Mariam, thank you for helping us through this call again. And you may stop the recording now.